And it is time for our monthly media segment, Signals and Noise. One thing we've noticed about running a monthly media segment in this point in history is that the topics come fast and furious. We can try to lock up the topics a few days in advance, but the avalanche of news frequently buries us right up to the last minute, which is okay up to a point. There's always plenty to talk about. We do define media very broadly, taking in items about the media themselves and content delivered over a broad range of media, from virtual reality to books. Our regular guests are here, regular and semi-regular in one case. Andrew Gay from the Communication Faculty at Southern Oregon University. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Chris Lucas, always good to see you as well.
Good morning, Jeff.
Chris is subbing for Precious Yamaguchi, who is on maternity leave until March. She just had a new baby. Congratulations, Precious. So obviously one of the bigger things going on in the media right now is impeachment. You could go wall to wall with impeachment, talk about nothing but impeachment, but there's the added interesting angle of when it is happening, not just in the election cycle, which is ongoing, but the fact that we have it going on at the same time potentially you could take a break from the impeachment hearings and see a promo for tonight, Frosty's Big Adventure. You
know? We need special holiday episodes of impeachment, I think. Yeah, and it's funny because I think impeachment television was one of my pick threes last time, but I've actually been tuning out in a lot of ways because I've found it really stressful to watch as it's gone on. So I'm actually not that informed of what's happening right now.
It's somewhat predictable too, don't you think? In the sense that the roles there are roles being played by the people of both parties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a feeling you're not alone in that, Andrew. I think my general sense. I've been kind of surprised at what feels like a level of indifference, and that might be partly due to the time of the year. I know people are talking about the surprising lack of interest in the Brexit, the election of Boris Johnson over in the UK.
Which is happening today. Yeah. Won't necessarily like Boris Johnson, but he's definitely involved.
Right. Yeah. And people are saying it's because, the Christmas season really dominates and people don't want to think about these, very controversial, contentious issues at this time of year.
That's entirely possible. When you're trying to get a message of peace on earth, goodwill toward people across, it doesn't necessarily help to have people lobbing rhetorical bombs at each other across the aisles of the U.S. Congress.
I do feel like there's an interesting divide in the polls around the impeachment. When you look at the polls, you still see pretty high numbers of people who want to see the process go forward. But then when you ask them if they want to actually see the president removed, the numbers drop. And I don't know if that's because people are kind of not in the mood to make that, what feels like a pretty drastic move, or if or it's the time of year, who knows? But I do know there's an interesting parallel. I think about, of course, the two impeachments that have been in my lifetime, Nixon and then Clinton, just how much it dominated in my memory, how much it dominated. I had family members who were so into that they got the Time Life video series. They subscribed to the magazines. They did it all. And that seems to be missing this time.
It will be interesting, based on what we're basically all agreeing on here, that December may play a big part in people not paying much attention to this portion of the process. But then the actual trial in the Senate, assuming the House does vote the articles of impeachment into law, that requires a trial in the Senate, which will take place after Christmas in January when Congress reconvenes. And that may be a whole different ball of wax when it comes to A, attention, and B, interest.
Yeah, I think, as a matter of showbiz and storytelling, I think it's one of the reasons why I'm kind of still confused about the strategy around a real rushed process in the House, and the sort of unwillingness of Democrats to really push some of these subpoenas and fight them and try to get more testimony. I don't know why the narrow focus as opposed to going broad on a lot of other issues that people are concerned about. Because to me, I feel like suck up the airtime with this and. As a media story, right? Dominate it and broaden it. I think in some ways, strategically being so narrow and quick is a disservice to certainly their own agenda.
Well, maybe more of a surgical strike kind of thing, but that gets into the realm of politics. We're right. Talking media here.
Right. Getting into the election year, it's going to get very tricky, trying to balance out the time to make sure the case for the candidates gets put forward. And if you have a trial going on at the same time, that's a lot to ask of the public. to pay attention to, for sure.
This is our media segment, Signals and Noise. Chris Lucas and Andrew Gay back in the studio with me. We're talking about a number of items, impeachment number one. You can join us, add an item, and or comment about the things you're hearing so far. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's wander away from politics for a bit. Talk about the Peloton TV commercial. Peloton is a stationary bike with a video screen, and you basically exercise with other people from across the country. And this spot where a guy gives his wife a Peloton for Christmas, and she's really excited about it. She spends a year doing all these selfie videos of herself on the Peloton and then plays them back for her husband at the end of the year and talks about how much her life has changed. It went bonkers on Twitter.
Yeah, and these things are like $2,000, right? I mean, they're not inexpensive bikes. I think that, you know, what was funny is that, you know, she's supposed to be excited, but there's all these kind of still frames grabbed from the video where she looks like she's trapped in a hostage situation.
Well, that's the thing. People have responded on Twitter like, you know, you just look at that guy, you can tell he's been abusing her. It's like people have just read all kinds of things into this spot.
Yeah, they did. I think it was just amusing. I think people saw the narrative of the classic story of a romantic gift at during the holidays, and instead it's this exercise bike, and you see this woman sort of like forcing herself to get up early to exercise, and just, you know, is this really what she wants, or is she doing this under the pressure of society and the patriarchy? And so it became a really funny story on Twitter. And of course, then there's the Aviator Gin ad, which is owned by
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, they cast the same woman.
Monica Ruiz is the actor, yes. And she was in both spots.
Which was brilliant. And it's just like an ad of her drinking and her friends sort of like consoling her and like, it's okay, it's over.
Right, and did you catch the last line of the ad when they actually show the bottle of Aviator Gin? Her friend says, "You look great."
Yeah. Yeah.
This was the spot that launched 100 hot takes, kind of. So what stands out to me is even the aviation ad it's a real ad. You know, these are actual commercials. They're selling things. Mm-hmm. And it's just very curious to me, I guess, to step back a bit and just think about the ad as kind of water cooler.
An ad basically that is responding to how the zeitgeist responded to another ad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, that ad, the Peloton ad in the first place, you know, it had a lot of the ingredients of what I think of, or what Henry Jenkins, the media critic, has called spreadable media. It's like sort of poised for virality because it pushes a number of buttons around social topics that are worth talking about. It talks, you know, it sort of triggers sort of outrage, but also mockery. It really feeds right into what is really a much broader move toward creating memes and meme culture and the circulation of images like this. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we still have this kind of commercial culture lurking back there, you know? And so these brands, Aviation, Peloton, are kind of getting their word out. And this is not new, right? I kind of think back to the Coke ad in the 70s, like,
I'd like to teach the world to
sing. Right,
say, yeah.
The Macintosh ad in the 80s. I mean, you know, really, some ads have always been impactful and kind of made it into the cultural conversation. Mm-hmm. And this, now I guess, as in so many ways, the cycle is growing shorter and more more hyped.
My favorite meme was a frame grab that showed the Peloton bike screen, and it had composited in an image from The Irishman by Martin Scorsese, uh-huh. which of course was released day and date both in theaters and on Netflix. And someone said, I'm watching The Irishman as Scorsese intended. It's just with The Irishman on the bike.
That would be a long bike ride.
Right. So let's give credit to the actors. Monica Ruiz, who appeared in both the Peloton and the Aviator Gin ad, and Sean Hunter, who played the husband who just thinks his career may have been ruined, both as an actor, as an elementary school teacher.
I did not know that. Wow.
I did want to mention that. I think it's pretty unfair the degree to which these actors have been targeted for the outrage around the ad itself. You know, I really feel for actors who are the most visible face of these media texts, mm-hmm. but You know, it's a day's work, right, for these guys.
Right, and he barely says a word. I don't actually remember. Is it kind of weird, too? My own perspective got a little skewed because we tend to mute commercials, even though I used to produce commercials, but we tend to mute them. And so I was watching the Peloton ad for, I'd probably seen it 3 or 4 or 5 times and wondered why the woman looked so worried. I mean, when she was first getting onto the bike, but I didn't make anything of it because I didn't know the context. And then after everything blew up, I went and listened to the spot and got the full context of it. It was just sort of interesting to get the images first and then get the rest of it later on and then find out what in God's name everybody was up in arms about. But it's been quite an amazing dust up. This is Signals and Noise, our media segment with Andrew Gay and Chris Lucas from the Communication Faculty at Southern Oregon University. Let's talk about Greta Thunberg, just named Time Magazine's Person of the Year and apparently the youngest ever.
Uh-huh. That's correct. Yeah. You know, I was really pleased about this. You know, I think as long as the media finds ways to keep us focused on the issue of climate change, I think that's all to the good. I do think, and I think Greta has done a fantastic job of managing that pressure as a young person. You know, really, ever since she took the boat over from Europe in this summer, has really been in the public eye a lot and has done an amazing job. And I think recently I'm seeing that she's really helping try to broaden the lens. I think the media has become really fixated on her because she has a remarkable story as someone, a young person suffering from Asperger's syndrome, or even not necessarily suffering, but really embracing that.
Mm-hmm.
And making it visible. At the same time, she's been willing to sort of pull in sort of indigenous communities and other kinds of other communities in the movement who've been doing this work, some of them actually longer than her, and trying to really make sure that people realize this is a broad movement, it's a young movement, and it deserves attention.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I haven't read the article yet, but I'm hopeful that it does at least, you know, nod to all those who've come before Greta, because obviously she's doing really important work. And having a personality and a spokesperson for an issue like this is really helpful. But I do think it's important to remember that, you know, she was not the first person to start this conversation, and that there's been lots of other people who have been fighting for this for a long time. But I think it's also, you know, kudos to Time for, you know, trolling the president and others who are pretty forcefully denying climate change. And I think, I think that's good for them.
And of course, the president did respond. He bashed Time magazine naming Greta Thunberg the person of the year. If you're wondering how old she is, she'll be 17 in 3 weeks.
Wow. Right.
So that is a young person. Mm-hmm. I want to bring in a call here.
Go ahead,
Chris.
Well, I just want to mention that one of the most perhaps kind of encouraging aspects of Greta's story to me is as a young person, you know, she was really affected, you know, depressed by the reality of climate change. And it was her taking action that sort of brought her out of that. But also she got her parents to change, right? So her parents entirely flipped their life around and
stopped flying,
lower their carbon footprint. And, in some ways, I think that is the story that we can be telling, you know, just about how we can influence each other.
Mm-hmm. Truly. Okay, let's take that call now from Karen in Grants Pass responding to the Peloton ad. Hi, Karen.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Yeah, there's an interesting little aspect of this whole Peloton thing is years ago, Peter Sagan, who's a world champion cyclist, it was a few Christmases ago, many Christmases ago, and there was a commercial that they put out, and I think it was Peloton, and the commercial is him giving his then to-be fiance and then wife, Katerina, a stationary bicycle, and she's just overjoyed. And they both get on their Peloton bike in their living room, and then they power the city, and all the Christmas lights come on. And it was really endearing and cute, and he's a really great ambassador for the sport. But I'm just finding the dichotomy of that ad, which was so well received, like, oh, how cute, he loves her, and this and that. And it wasn't anything of, oh, he's got to get her to lose weight or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And this round of the ad with it. So
yeah, a very, very different response.
Dig that ad up, they should see that and I'd be interested to see what people have to say.
Okay, Karen, while we were talking, I was looking that there is on YouTube, Peter Sagan apparently is replying to whether the Peloton ad is sexist. So those two things sort of merge once again, as they often do in the media landscape. Let's move on in Signals and Noise and talk about Sinclair Broadcasting, which owns more TV stations than any other group in the country and, of course, famous for its must-runs, the must-run commentaries of Boris Epstein and more recently Amisha Cross, and recently announced it is dropping those must-run commentary stations are no longer required to run. They won't be offered anymore. Boris Epstein apparently is moving into some sort of sales role at Sinclair Broadcasting, and the statement from the company is that it wants to focus more on investigative journalism than commentary.
Yeah, I found that fascinating because, I mean, this is something we've talked about a few times, I think, on this show. And there's been certainly, I think, a lot of criticism and blowback about these must runs. So, I did not anticipate this move. So I thought that was a really interesting change.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised as well. Although, you know, when I started to think about it, I often kind of think about the kind of larger competitive dynamics going on here. I really saw that move by Sinclair as really an attempt to compete more directly with Fox. You know, it was where Fox has kind of got this cable empire. Sinclair's got a really strong base in local broadcasting and was basically becoming the second strong conservative voice in the media sphere. And so then the Tribune merger, right, that we talked about a couple months ago, that was part of that strategy is the way I saw it. Then that fell through.
Right.
So here's, so I think there's kind of a rethink going on. However, you know, they're still really strong. I mean, it's a conservative network. They still have somewhat notorious Sebastian Gorka on staff. Mm-hmm. They've hired people from Fox in the last few months. So they're adding content that is still within that, on that political side of the aisle.
And thank you for bringing that up, Chris, because it reminds me that the reporter whose name escapes me at the moment who asked Nancy Pelosi the question the other day, do you hate President Trump? And got a total in-your-face answer about don't mess with me with words like that. That was a reporter who had worked at Fox and is now working for Sinclair Broadcasting.
That's Rosen, I think, right? James
yes,
Rosen.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I'm curious whether, you know, behind the scenes, is there pushback coming from some of these stations, the local folks saying, you know, this isn't serving our community. We're getting blowback, if that played into this at all.
Well, I knew people who worked at Sinclair stations who said that they got around some of the must-run stuff, but it said you had to run it in your morning news, and they ran it at like 4:55 just before the morning news started, stuff like that.
So they were absolutely getting resistance from the local level and from their newsrooms that, you know, probably was not comfortable.
Yeah, it's an interesting strategic move because, as you pointed out, Chris, they do want to be bigger than they are. They're right now held by the ownership cap, which stops them at 39-point-something% of the population reached with their broadcast signals. But if they were able to buy more stations, they could maybe convince regulators to go a little higher. But it hasn't happened so far. Let's move on in this segment of Signals and Noise with Andrew Gay and Chris Lucas and talk about Frozen 2, killing at the box office, not surprisingly, I guess.
I mean, I saw it opening night.
You did.
You got two little girls.
Yeah,
right?
I did.
You have two.
Yeah. Actually, it wasn't even opening night. It was the preview night, the night before the opening night. So, yeah, it was a good time. You know,
people did notice that Disney opened Frozen 2 a week before Thanksgiving, which was sort of a break with their past strategies. They like to open a big animated film on Thanksgiving. This time was a week in advance, and it seems to have paid off handsomely for them.
And I wonder, too, how much Frozen 2's release date was to get ahead of the crush of holiday movies, the ones that come out right around Christmas, like the big Star Wars finale.
You know, both Disney, and I'm sure they want to space these out, and, you know, they own, you know, almost everything now. So they got to space out their properties, so that, you know, makes sense to me.
No studio's ever had a year like Disney has this year, right?
With no studio's ever owned this.
Oh, that's right, because they own the Marvel properties, in addition to the Star Wars properties.
Five films this year that grossed over $1 billion with Avengers, Toy Story, Captain Marvel, Aladdin, Lion King, right? That was this year. And then now we're going to have another. Star Wars certainly will gross over $1 billion and Frozen. So this is a behemoth at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, so let's quickly get into the streaming part of this, because you mentioned Disney Plus, mm-hmm. and of course, you know, Disney owns, and they want to roll things out, put their own properties on their own streaming service, which raises the question for consumers: is like, do I have to then get Netflix, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, Apple Plus?
Yes, you do.
Yeah, and of course Disney isn't alone. I mean, we have, you know, obviously there's CBS All Access. NBC is in the process of launching their new service, you know, which has been a big topic of discussion around, you know, Friends in the Office on Netflix and how they're eventually going to be leaving. You know, I'm sure there's going to be others that are going to start launching their own streaming services. So it's going to be harder and harder to say, oh, I'm just going to get this one streaming service and get the content I want. You know, we are now at the a la carte cable, where you're going to have to pay per the channel you want.
I'm only smiling because as a longtime veteran of broadcast television, it's like you're talking about changing channels then, basically. Yeah. You just have a device, you go up to the TV and you change the channel.
Yeah. Well, we're really seeing the fruition of clearly a strategy that's meant to tie together all of these platforms now, right? So you have Disney that rolls out The Mandalorian just in time for all of the Star Wars content to hit Disney Plus, mm-hmm. so everybody can kind of binge that.
And there's something new in addition to the old stuff.
And now we're ready for the new Star Wars movie and Christmas, and it's merchandising of Baby Yoda. You know, it's all around us.
All right, 45 seconds each for pick three.
I'll let Chris go first.
Okay. kind of on the impeachment train, I think I may have actually pitched this before, but the Lawfare podcast has been doing these shortened, what they call condensations of the impeachments, where they just will play, they're like podcasts, but they just play the question, the answer.
Oh, really?
And then you can hear like a whole day of content from our government in like 45 minutes with all the posturing removed. Uh-huh. I saw Knives Out recently as a good alternative
Knives
to the
Out.
Disney world. Actually, maybe that is a Disney film. I'm sorry. but anyway, that's a good Star Wars alternative, Knives Out. And then finally, reading Catch and Kill, the Ronan Farrow book, which is an amazing look inside contemporary journalism.
Ah, okay. Yep. Ronan Farrow book. Okay.
I also had Knives Out, which is also directed by a Star Wars director. Yeah. An app called 10% Happier. It's a little cheesy, but I've been highly stressed lately, and it's a sort of a meditation app, and so I've been using that. And then a show called Schitt's Creek, which is S-C-H-I-T-T. I didn't swear
in the air. Thank you for the good spelling. Yes.
Uh-huh. Eugene Levy and his son co-created it. It's been out for a few years, but a former student of mine just turned me on to it, and it's really funny.
Stephen Colbert loves to say that name on his show. Schitt's Creek is a German name, I'm sure. S-C-H-I-T-T. So there you go. But that's on Netflix, is it?
Yeah. It's currently on Netflix, and it airs on Pop. The original seasons air on Pop TV and on the Canadian Broadcast.
Okay. A whole smorgasbord of media offerings from Andrew Gay and Chris Lucas from the Communication Faculty at Southern Oregon University, made up the December Signals and Noise. Happy holidays. Thanks for joining us. See you guys in January.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
That's it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. More coming up in hour two.